Becoming a DO. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this 177th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Accepted has worked with many applicants to osteopathic medical school, and we have posts and resources for osteopathic medical school applicants, which I will, and I'll link to a few of them from accepted.com/177. But we have not, as of yet, had a podcast devoted to the osteopathic student experience. I think it's time to change that. I've invited Ashley Roxanne Peterson, currently a second-year osteopathic medical student, to join me today on the show and talk about her pre-med and medical school experience. Ashley attended UNC in Charlotte, where she majored in anthropology and minored in sociology. Today, she is in her second year at the Georgia campus of the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. Ashley Roxanne, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be able to speak with everyone today.
Great. Pleasure to have you on. Now, can you give us a little background about your path to medicine?
Yes, of course. So I started actually wanting to do something different than medicine when I came to school at UNC Charlotte. But by the time that I started volunteering and taking different classes, I discovered that I really love medicine and interacting with people and being able to help others in their journey. And through shadowing, I decided on my path to medicine. And so I came straight from UNC Charlotte and started medical school.
Oh, wow. So no gap year, nothing like that, right?
No, I did not have a gap year. But I would actually emphasize that those who feel like they want to take a gap year.
Right. Now, did you, what were the experiences? You said when you started at UNC, you didn't intend to go into medicine, allopathic or osteopathic. What convinced you that medicine is the right path for you?
For me, it was shadowing physicians. Mm-hmm. I really got to see how they interact with their patients every day, how they use science and how they use their medical background to help different people from different backgrounds. And I liked how versatile medicine was. There are so many different careers where you can help people, but I like that it was a marriage between science and a marriage between different cultures and a marriage between lifelong learning and being a leader in your field. And that's why I decided on medicine.
Okay. Now, your major as an undergrad was anthropology and sociology. How did you get the science in, given that you were, again, your major was in that, you minored in sociology, given that you had all the social science requirements?
Yes, ma'am. So I was really thankful that when I came into college, I had a couple of high school credits that transferred over. So that was a blessing because it helped me to complete some of my basic requirements for my degree. And I was able to add more classes every semester. I also kind of took a larger workload every semester. I had at least 18 hours every
Ouch.
Semester.
Wow.
trying to fit everything in because thankfully the prerequisites, there's not as many as maybe some other programs, but you just have to take the physics and biology. And so I added those classes to the usual 15 hours that other people take. I added 3 more hours of Wow. the science classes in order to supplement my anthropology and social sciences background.
So at what point in college did you realize it was medicine you wanted to pursue? Was it your sophomore year, freshman year, junior year?
It was sophomore year when I strongly began to understand my passion. I was already taking some science courses because I I thought of switching my major to chemistry at one point, actually. I stuck with anthropology in the long run. And by considering chemistry, I already had some of the prerequisites for medical school. And so it all just fell into place in a nice little puzzle. And it's funny looking back because some of those choices that I made to consider chemistry, to consider anthropology, it all worked out in the end.
Do you feel that your background in anthropology and sociology is helping you or will help you as a physician?
I do. And I say this because, and I might be biased and I might be overstating because it's just my own personal story. Every other anthropology degree medical school student might not feel this way, but I feel as though I've been exposed to some of the more social aspects of medicine, whether that be cultural competency. That's becoming a really big topic in medical sure. school currently, and whether it's different studies and how it shows how social determinants affect your health. I remember my favorite class in undergrad was actually called medical anthropology, and we read different books and looked at different case studies that showed how your daily cultural learned behaviors have some of the biggest impacts and are some of the biggest determinants of your health. I think at least having exposure or knowing that there are different resources that I can access to receive this information will help me as a physician to understand more about how my patient lives when they go home from the doctor, because they probably only see me unless they're really sick every 3 times a year. How are they living every other day, and how that determines their illnesses and progression, and even the genetic factors. Sickle cell anemia was a big class component in my anthropology degree, believe it or not. And just seeing how culture and medicine meet in order to have a humanistic approach.
Right. I would assume that culture would also tremendously impact compliance.
Absolutely. Every patient is different, but sure. there are some, for example, there are certain religions that don't believe in blood transplants and blood transfusions and things of that nature. And so understanding that, why they believe that, and being accepting, because everyone doesn't understand everyone's beliefs. And I think anthropology has really helped me to understand how different people think. And not everyone is homogenous in a group.
Sure.
But saying that, I've seen this before with this religion. And I think it decreases some shock value because other people scratch their heads and they say, oh, this makes sense to me. But it's easier to say why it makes sense to someone else.
Right.
So understanding that process.
Okay, thanks. Now, did you apply to any, when you were applying, did you apply strictly osteopathic or did you apply to allopathic and osteopathic programs?
I actually applied to both. I applied to schools whose mission fits what my future plans are, which is primary care. That's remained unchanged since I applied to medical school. And so I applied to allopathic and osteopathic schools whose mission fit a primary care perspective, whether that's they have a lot of primary care graduates or they place an emphasis on rotating at rural and urban areas and things of that nature, really doing my research to see if these schools were concurrent with my path. And as I said, they have not changed my future goals in medicine.
All right. Now, what attracted you to the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine specifically?
The biggest thing then was location. Because I have family in Alabama, Georgia. My best friend lives in Georgia. It was not far away from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually lived in this area before because I have a military family background, and we had lived here for 3 years a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was familiar with the area, so location was really big for me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one of my mentors, she went to school here, and she told me amazing things about the school. And she really influenced me to apply and to accept my interview and to ultimately choose Georgia PCOM. So I thank her for that. And then finally, I chose the school because of their mission and because I do believe that they're preparing me to be a great primary care physician. And our rotations will also, that also was a factor because our locations for rotations matter. So location, influence of people who have influenced me, and the mission of the school. I think those are some of the biggest reasons.
Okay. What were some of the amazing things that your mentor told you about? And did you find that, would you agree with them? Would you agree with her assessment today?
I do agree. And one of the biggest things that she emphasized was our OMM program. So OMM is osteopathic manipulative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The faculty here is amazing. They are well published, well researched. She emphasized the osteopathic integration in the curriculum. She also emphasized that the class is very diverse, whether that is by background, age. There's a lot of people who have families in our class. And finally, she emphasized that she was happy here.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that I kind of latched on to, that she felt like she would probably apply again. And so that made me feel like, oh, this, I could be happy here because I like her and she likes it here. Well, I could be happy here too.
And being happy is a good thing. Let's go back to when you applied. When this is probably less happy memories. What was the hardest part of the application process for you when you applied, the medical school application process?
That's an excellent question. I think the hardest part was realizing my weaknesses.
That's always hard.
Yes, it's very hard. You want to be this amazing applicant with a top MCAT score and a top GPA and a top extracurriculars. And there were some parts of my application that I was really happy with. But
uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I did have one weakness that actually wasn't, I could have improved. And it was hard to realize that maybe I could have done more before I applied. I do feel like in some regards I had a late start to realizing my dream. And I just felt the hardest part was having to put down, this is my best, and understanding that I hope a school wants me for what I put on paper. And also realizing, I think another hard part for me was realizing that my personality can't show on paper.
Instead, I don't know about that. Go ahead.
That's true. You can work very, I think you can use your personal statement to your advantage. But statistics are very important.
Yes.
And realizing that what I put on paper is what people see first, and then wow them with an interview or whichever. So just, and the unknown, there's a lot of unknowns. You don't know if you're going to get a secondary from that school or interview from that school. So the unknown, not knowing the unknown, trying to make sure my application and materials reflected me best, and realizing that maybe you could have done more, but what you have is great, and it all worked out in the end.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. Would you mind sharing what you felt was your weakness, or you don't want to discuss that?
Oh, no, it's absolutely fine. I feel like my MCAT was my weakness, and it's funny because I actually got a pretty average score. I wasn't below, but I wasn't high either. And I felt like the problem is I didn't prepare well for my MCAT. People are horrified when I tell them how long I studied for the MCAT. So I should have studied more. I should have studied differently. I didn't take a prep course. I feel like a lot of people who I knew were very successful took a prep course. I self-studied. And just realizing that my MCAT was lower than my GPA, like in the tiers. My MCAT was more average. My GPA was a little higher. And so that limited where I was competitive as far as schools go. And looking back, maybe I should have retaken it, but I went ahead and applied.
And it worked out.
And it worked out, and I got some successes, so I'm thankful for that, but I don't know, maybe I'm being a perfectionist, which is crazy hearing me say that I'm a perfectionist, but maybe I'm just being a perfectionist and thinking that I could have had a better MCAT.
Well, like you say, you got into a school that you wanted to go to, so on some level you had just the right MCAT, and it worked.
Yes, it worked.
I mean, they're not trophies, right? There's a purpose to the MCAT, and if it gets you where you want to be, then you had a perfectly fine MCAT. Now, let's think back, or if you could think back, to your medical school interviews. What was the most memorable question you were asked?
The most memorable question I was asked. At one MD school, my age came up because when I applied to medical school, I was very young. Or I was younger, I think, than most applicants. And so they questioned, I think, my experience, which was good. I think it's good, but I do feel as though it took me aback. Because it wasn't a question I had prepared for, but I did try to use just speaking about my life and different experiences to show, I guess, maturity, experience, and why are you ready to dedicate your entire life to medicine at this point in your life. So I think that was the most memorable question, just because it was a surprising question. To me, I made a list of questions I thought schools would ask, and that wasn't one of the questions. it was very personal. I remember thinking, oh man, I hope this is not like a bad thing. I hope they think I'm great, because I can't really change my age.
Well, you can wait a year, then you'll be a year older. I promise.
That's true.
Youth takes care of itself. Old age doesn't. That's what passage of time takes care of being too young. But anyways.
Very true. So I think that was my most memorable question. Another question I would say is I was asked, what would I do if I had a non-compliant patient who entered my clinic, and I had, I think they said something to the effect of 20 patients waiting outside. Would I see them, and would I not see them? And I think that's an ethical question, and I said that I would see them, because if they're coming to the doctor's office, they're making an effort to come. There's a lot of patients that don't come. So if they've shown up to their appointment, I'm going to see them, even if they're not compliant. And maybe I need to look into some of those social determinants of why they aren't taking their medication, such as, is the medication giving them, is it making them nauseous? Is it making them dizzy to where they feel like they can't perform at work well? Or is it making them, do they have diarrhea? Just some of the more common complaints,
right,
to see why. Are they not compliant? Instead of just writing them off and saying, well, you're not compliant, so
you're not going to listen anyways. You're not going to listen anyways. Why should I talk to you?
Right.
That's basically what the question is.
Trying to see the why instead of just saying bad, because humans are really complex. So I try, but I can see why someone would say otherwise, because noncompliance is a big issue.
Sure.
And I think that medicine is time constricted. Like, time is a very big factor now, especially in primary care. So I can see both flips of the coin, to say.
Right. Now, in your blog, you emphasize the importance of a network and networking. Your blog is dailymedicine.co, and we are going to link to it from the show notes at accepted.com/177. But what does a network or networking mean to you, and why do you think it's so important?
To me, networking is just building relationships, whether it's professional relationship, whether it's your friends, whether it's your peers. Networking is all about relationships. And even relationships that are not strong, just acquaintance. Someone who passes you in the hall and says hello to you. I think that's networking, because that puts a smile on your face. Just networking is important. The networking that most people refer to, professional networking, because there are certain doors that you may not know of. And your network only expands how many doors you have access to. Let's say we were in a big office building, most of the doors are locked. Well, behind some of those doors are people who you can call, and they'll open the door for you from the other side. So now you have access to all these floors in the building, and you could end up at the top floor. I guess that's what most people will refer to, like a leader, the dean of a school eventually, or whichever is your goal, the chief resident. And a lot of times people refer to quotes, so I'm going to say a quote. A lot of people say that we stand on the shoulders of others, sure. And I believe that. And so that's what networking means to me. It's very important because people, and you can also open doors for other people. I think that's what's most important to being a friend, a colleague, a good person to other people. Hey, yeah, for example, I know someone who wants to do orthopedic surgery. Over the weekend, 2 weeks ago, I met an orthopedic surgeon at a location that she would probably like because her hometown is 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. So I just picked up a business card and took a picture and sent it to her. Just little things like that. You never know who you're going to meet, and building relationships with people is important. That's why I love networking.
Right. Well, I think I said this before, but sometimes networking has a bad connotation, because I think it's so frequently means thinking about people in terms of what you can get from them. And I think that's a very negative approach to it. I think you're right. It's more about what you can do in terms of building relationships. It's showing yourself as a supportive and giving friend, usually as a resource, if in a more professional context. But yeah, I would say that. Now, is there any particular group you recommend for pre-meds?
I would say you should access your local school pre-medicine club.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of different clubs. There's AMSA. I was a member of AMSA. There's SOMA, which is for osteopathic schools. I was a member of that. And then there's Student National Medical Association, which I'm heavily involved in, which is to diversify medicine. Mm-hmm. So there's so many different groups. I think there's also a Latino Medical Student Association. So there's so many different organizations that you can join at your school if you're a pre-med. I would start there because they have local resources. Like, for example, if you're in North Carolina, they're going to go to North Carolina Medical School, where you will be an in-state resident. And so you have a better chance of getting accepted to that medical school.
And paying less for it. And you pay less for it.
Thinking ahead, you will pay less tuition. It's all amazing. And so local resources are the best. But most of these local chapters are affiliated with a national organization, which will have a greater reach, if that's what you're looking for. So I employ pre-med to look to their local pre-medical chapters. And if they don't have any of those four, look towards the national organizations and just find a buddy or a friend or a peer or a mentor through the national organization if you don't have one at your institution. Because I realize that some colleges might not have
that
access.
Now, every med student that I've ever interviewed said or talked to, I don't have to interview them, says there's a quantum leap in the workload and the demands when you start medical school as an M1. How did you handle, first of all, did you find that also? And how did you handle the volume of work and the just volume of things to learn, as well as any associated stress when you were an M1?
Of course. So a lot of people will tell you, this is a common imagery that people use, that getting to medical school and preparing for medical school and being pre-med is like drinking out of a water fountain.
Right.
And that once you get to medical school.
It's not a water fountain, it's a fire hydrant. It's a fire hydrant.
Yes, once you get to medical school, it's a fire hydrant. So it goes from a water fountain to a fire hydrant.
Right.
So think of that difference. And so in order to deal with that, you have to figure out different ways to collect water, which is what I tell people. So you have to say, well, today I'm going out in front of the fire hydrant, so I'm going to wear rain boots. That means you made a plan. So you have to plan. You have to set out a schedule for the week. And that means, like, even your meals, like, what am I going to eat today? What am I going to do today? And you need to, in your schedule, put stuff for yourself. Like, for example, eating for me is like a pastime. It's like pleasurable. So I say, okay, today I'm going to eat my favorite food, which is, I don't know, tacos. And for me, that's quality time with myself. For other people, I know that they like to exercise. I exercise too, but some people go for 10-mile runs. So they need to put that down in their time plan. Versus I just need 30 minutes every other day. some other people need 3 hours, so I can, 2-3 hours. So that's something you have to plan, and just putting that in your plan. And then even further, if you have a family, I know so many people have families or children, working with their schedule too. So making a schedule is really big. Okay, so you put on your rain boots, you had a plan, you knew you were going to the fire hydrant today. The other thing about the fire hydrant is you need something to help support you. So you bring all your other firefighters with you. And so that's where your peers come in. You're making relationships with your classmates, I think, is the biggest thing that you can do to help with the workload. Someone is going to be able to take notes for you. Someone's going to be the note taker. Someone's always going to be someone. There's always going to be someone in the class who loves to take notes. If they just send that to you, that saves you an hour of typing up notes. And time is precious. So now you have some more help. And so overall, I think it's about finding different ways in which you can make the stream of water or the stream of information a little bit more manageable. And I think planning and collaborating with others in a group to make the workload a little less is amazing. And then just taking time for yourself and protecting, like, your, and it's hard to say, I don't know if this is what I want to use, but protecting your, like, spirit, protecting your heart, protecting your personality, your brain, whatever one calls your aura, just protecting that to make sure that you're mentally, like, okay, whether that's being with family, whether that's just watching your favorite show for 1 hour on the weekend and then going back to studying, whether that's running, whether you're a spiritual person, whether you're someone who needs to be around others or be alone. Just do what you need to do to make sure that your mind is clear. So those three things.
Okay. That was a very thoughtful answer. Thank you. Where do you see your career going in the future? So you have, I don't know if you started as part of your program, seeing patients. Obviously, the third year is next year. That's when you'll really start seeing patients. Where do you see yourself headed? I know it's primary care.
I really want to do primary care. I would probably do family medicine. I've also considered geriatrics and psych. My dad was military, so he goes through some PTSD syndromes. So that's really interested me in psych. I say geriatrics because I did an amazing summer program at Johns Hopkins this summer, and it was geriatrics-based. And it was amazing. And so it's really given me a passion for geriatrics. But I could also use family medicine to do either one of those. There's combined programs. And then there's fellowships. And so I'm really leaning towards family medicine and working in an urban underserved area. So like Atlanta Metro, Detroit, Baltimore, even a city like Charlotte would be a great city to get started. Because I think that's where the greatest need is for primary care, also in rural areas. So that's why I want to put some of my efforts.
Okay. What do you wish I would have asked you today? Any last bits of wisdom for pre-meds?
I wish you would have asked me how I stay positive.
Okay, that's a great question because you are very positive. How do you stay positive?
I think that, and sometimes people are sensitive to this answer, but I try to stay positive by just thinking about the others that came before me. If they can do it, I can do it. There's so many, there's thousands of doctors, and they made it. I can make it to school too. It's been done before, so try to figure out how they did it and then use it so you can be successful. I also try to think about, like, the sacrifices of my family, which is kind of like a guilt trip for some people, but for me it's very motivating. It's very motivating to see my dad work for so many years in the military, work hard and give service to his country. I think that's why I love community service, things of that nature, because I grew up in it. It was a daily part of my family life, just using some of my past values. So sticking to my values. And then also just try to stay positive by being around positive people. There are different people in the class. There's you have your gunners, and there's positive gunners. I think people get that misconstrued. There are people who are positive and they're gunners. So I try to say you're on a positive gunner. and then there's people who are more like, man, school sucks today. We've all been there, but not everyone says it out loud. And then when you don't say it out loud, that's a little better. You're just like, you know what, today was one day, but it's going to be great when I go home and study. You know, just staying around people who also are positive. And trying to be a ray of positivity yourself can also, you'll see how other people are more positive when you're positive.
That's for sure.
And thinking about consciously what comes, like, out of your mouth. Because the other day I realized I was complaining about something. I was like, man, it's really cold in here. And really the solution was, I should have brought a jacket. As opposed to just saying, it's really cold. Just finding the solution for things and getting things done. So that's mostly how I stay positive. I employ everyone to try to stay positive because it can be hard. It can be long, and you probably will want to complain. And it's okay to complain because getting your feelings out is good. But then also try to find solutions and just stay positive.
Right. Well, I think you're right. I think you're giving some very good advice to our listeners, and I appreciate it. Being around positive people, being positive yourself, you know, taking responsibility for not taking your sweater or jacket, and then moving on.
Yeah. You know?
All right, so tomorrow you'll bring your sweater or jacket, or you'll stand in the sun for a few minutes or whatever. No, excellent advice. I really appreciate it. Ashley Roxanne, I think we're running out of time. Thanks so much for joining me for this podcast and sharing your experience and perspective and advice. Where can listeners find your blog and learn more and get more positivity?
No, I want to thank you for having me. I'm really appreciative. I just want to be able to help pre-meds and help people around me who, I remember being pre-med and I remember looking for advice. So any advice I can give, you can find on my blog, Daily Medicine blog, and my website address is dailymedicine.co.
Got it. That's C-O, not .com. Got it. Okay. We're going to link from the show notes at accept.com/177 to dailymedicine.co. That's Ashley Roxanne's blog, as well as to a couple of posts she wrote on Accepted's blog and an interview we had with her earlier, I think this year or last year. In addition, you'll also find other related resources discussed during this podcast, as well as some that are relevant but didn't get mentioned, at accepted.com/177. Listener, thank you, too, for tuning in to this, our 177th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. My fave is Overcast. We have subscribe links in the show notes at accepted.com/177. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.